Hey everybody, Peter Thomas for Natal here, and we've got a great show for you today. But before we get into it, just want to give you a word from the sponsor of this new podcast, Keeneland Select. Some great promos you want to be aware of heading into this meet. There's a sign-up bonus. If you bet $300 in the first 30 days, you will receive $100 back into your account. And new for spring, if you sign up for Keeneland Select now and bet $500 on Keeneland Racing during the spring meet, you'll receive $50 back into your account. Bet another $500 and get another $50 back, maximum of $1,000 wagered on the Keeneland Live meet. Still, that's a nice kickback and a really good deal. We want you to use the promo code ITM19 to sign up today. Again, make sure you use the promo code ITM19 when you sign up for Keeneland Select. For more information, go to KeenelandSelect.com.
The race is on and it looks like heartaches, and the winner loses all.
Hello and welcome to the Keeneland Select Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatale, back with you for show number two. In a little bit, we'll be talking about the racing that's going to be going on Sunday, April 7th. We're going to be doing a little bit of a time jump on today's show. It might seem a little odd. I don't want to reveal all the secrets, but we're recording the show in two chunks. And this first chunk is designed to be more of an evergreen chunk. And then a little bit later today, we're going to be recording the second part, which is going to have a little piece of content by request where we talk to the co-hosts of this show in real time before the featured race at Keeneland on opening day, the Palisades Sprint. Get a sense of how they construct their wagers. We're also going to talk to them about a handful of races on the Sunday card. Should be a lot of fun. Just bear with me. It'll be worth it, I promise. Before we get to any of that stuff, I want to bring in a voice you heard on the first edition of this podcast and a voice you're going to be hearing throughout the run of this Keeneland Select Players podcast. Want to get to know professional horse player Sean Borman a little bit better. Sean, how are you this morning?
Doing great, Pete. How are you?
Things are good. I think I might have gotten in a little bit of trouble being cheeky on Twitter this morning. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't know. Tell me.
So somebody was complaining. I think it was Elliot Honecker, our friend, will give Donegal Racing another call. He's one of the Donegal owners who always seem to beat JK and me out of big scores. And he was complaining about a relative or close friend who's getting married on Belmont Day and wondering how to handle such a thing. And I said, it's as simple as this. People in horse players' lives have to just understand they can get married and die. They just can't do it on Triple Crown Saturdays or the Breeders' Cup.
That's a funny story. I've got a friend that did the exact same thing. For years, when he was a single man, swore up and down that there were certain days you just couldn't get married on. Derby Day being one, Belmont Day being one. He's actually thrown a Belmont Day party for years and years. And what day did he get married? Belmont Day.
Well, I guess we know who wears the pants in that relationship.
I'm not going to touch that one in case he listens. But yeah, I think you're right.
That's amazing. Well, it goes the other way, too. I noticed, I'm not sure if it's like public knowledge or how this person is about his private life, so I'm not going to out him, but somebody that we know, he may even be a guest on this show at some point, chose the absolute perfect weekend to get married. I think it's 2 weeks before the Breeders' Cup. So all the preps are done. Don't have to worry about any of that. You get even a little distance from the Breeders' Cup, so you don't have to travel the multiple weekends in a row. If a wise guy were to sit down with a calendar in front of him and pick the right day to get married, this friend of ours did it, and I was very impressed with that one. What about you? What time of year did you get married? Did you have any of these conflicts?
No, we got married in early August.
I don't know, man. Saratoga, that's right. A little dodgy.
Yeah. It might have been claiming Crown Day at Ellis Park, too, if I remember right. But, I mean, you know, claiming Crown, really cares.
I think you really just need to set aside Breeders' Cup and Triple Crown. I've missed an Alabama day for a wedding. I probably at some point in my life will have to, God forbid, miss a Travers, but we shall see. All right, I want to get into a little bit about your background, Sean. And as I like to do occasionally on this podcast, on the other podcast, I'll ask the tough question first. And the tough question is, as a professional player, do you have any concerns about coming on a podcast and sharing your opinions? There are those out there a little haughty on Twitter, I've heard, say a professional would never reveal his secrets, et cetera, et cetera. How do you answer that question? Why are you comfortable coming on here and giving your opinions about these races?
No, I have no concerns whatsoever, because I've learned over the years that it's not really your opinion that matters. It's how you bet your opinions out the windows. And, you know, I know that I'll hopefully still be able to go to the windows and bet my opinions in a more efficient, smarter manner, even if I give them out. So, no, I really have no concerns whatsoever.
Let's talk about how you got started. When did you first become aware of horse racing as a lifelong Lexington guy? I imagine it was pretty early on.
Sure, yeah, I was aware that Keeneland existed very early on, but didn't make my first trip to the track until I was 15 or 16. A friend of mine and I skipped school one day while we were at Lexington Catholic High School and decided we wanted to go to the races. First person we bumped into was president of the school, standing in the paddock, racing form in hand, getting ready to dope out his early daily double, so... We spent a few hours dodging him, running around, and trying to get bets down. But that was my first trip to Keeneland. You know, I'd say I was 15.
Do you think your family kept you away from it, or was it just coincidence they weren't that into it? How far back does racing go with the Borman clan?
No, I don't think they kept me away from it at all. It just wasn't something we did, I guess. I mean, you know, growing up, the only time we would have gone was on the weekends, and I was always playing sports, and my sister always had stuff going on. I just don't think it really fit into our life at the time. But they certainly didn't keep it from me.
What was it about racing that attracted you from the get-go?
I've always been very interested in statistics and studying stats of players in all sports, and you know, the handicapping of it is what got me the most interested. It was just sort of a puzzle, and I enjoyed trying to figure it out. I actually started becoming interested in gambling in general and making my own lines on Major League Baseball games and pro football games. Terrible lines, I'm sure, but lines nonetheless. And then, you know, just quickly figured out that if I wanted to make a bet on something, it was much easier to go to the racetrack and do it legally, somewhat legally. I was under 18, but legally and earlier in my life than waiting until I was 21 to get into a casino or trying to find a bookie. It was just the easier outlet to bet on something.
And at what point did you get the somewhat crazy and radical idea that this was something you could do for a living?
I was briefly at the University of Kentucky and didn't really like school and loved handicapping and betting, and just made a decision that I would, you know, I wanted to drop out of school and it, just give it a go to be a professional gambler. And talked to my parents about it, and they very reluctantly gave me the okay. They were concerned about my happiness more than, you know, probably in their mind fleeting idea of being a professional gambler. So that's what I did. I dropped out and just studied and read as much as I possibly could about racing and handicapping, and just started with a very small amount of money betting races.
Did you have any aha moment that made you think this would be possible? I mean, was there somebody that you saw in your life who was doing this? How did you even know the concept?
I guess just reading racing books gave me the concept that it was possible. And then I was lucky enough to meet and learn under Mike Maloney at a pretty early age. And I guess watching Mike gave me the idea, or really, first I just learned about Mike. I read an article in the Racing Form about him, and it was a short little bio, and that sort of gave me the idea that it's certainly possible. And then once I met him and saw how he went about his business, that, you know, confirmed the idea that it was possible. But it was really, you know, at the very beginnings of it, it was just sort of an idea. You know, it was something I wanted to try. I had no idea if it was going to work. I'm lucky enough that it did. But yeah, it was just an idea, just something I wanted to do.
Something you've wanted to do that's been going on now for, is it a couple of decades? How long have you been at this?
I've been a very serious horse player for about 20 years, and I've been what I would say professional for 15, 16 years.
I want to follow up more about Mike, but first I want to talk about the books that you read back in the day that also got you on this path. I'm going to assume the name Andy Beyer is among those that you read back then.
Of course. I've read all of his books, the Steve Davidowitz books, James Quinn, Brohammer, anything that I could find in a bookstore or DRS bookstore that was about handicapping, about gambling, I bought and read and reread many times, a lot of them.
I'm going to take a wild guess that the fundamentals of handicapping, a lot of those ideas came from the books, but it was under Mike's tutelage that you really got into the betting side of things that you referred to earlier as being the more important of the two. Am I right in that supposition?
Absolutely. You know, one of the really interesting things that Mike and I both learned, I think, while we worked together every day, was we would share information. We would compile and share the same information, and we would sit right next to each other and talk the races over every day. And we would have wildly different betting results. Most of the time betting on the same horses. And that quickly showed me how much more important the betting side of this is than the handicapping side. It's just how you construct your wagers and how you press the horses you want to press and fade the horses you want to fade that really dictate long-term profitability. You know, I've always said I'm a pretty good handicapper, but I know people that are far better handicappers than I am that aren't as good gamblers and couldn't be a professional horse player, but they could pick a lot more long-priced horses than I do.
It sounds like
bet construction and money management and emotional management that can make you a professional.
That's great stuff, and that's a lot of topics we'll be getting into more on this show. And at some point, we're going to have you on the other show, and we'll do a lot more down the rabbit hole about some of those areas, because each one of those things you just mentioned could basically be a podcast in and of itself. Here today, we're just going to go a few more minutes talking about you and your background before we move on to the next segment and start talking about those Keeneland Sunday races. So people are probably listening being like, Pete, why don't you ask more about that? We will, all in good time, but I'm just not sure that now is the time. I do want to ask a couple more questions, though, and the first one has to do with your edge. Clearly, you believe that a big chunk of the edge has to do from your ability to construct wagers properly, but I'm guessing that's not the only thing that gives you an edge to be able to do this professionally. Where else does that come from?
That's a great question. I think, you know, the making and compiling just proprietary data, speed figures, pace figures, bias information, trip notes, all of that stuff contributes to my edge.
Well, that's
but it's really how you use that information that is the biggest part of it, I believe.
Well, we'll be getting into a lot of this stuff. I want to ask one more about Mike Maloney before we do our little time jump here in the middle of the show. gotten some pretty good ideas about some of the lessons you learned from him. What's a lesson you had to learn on your own?
The most important lesson I had to learn was just how to lose properly, how to handle the emotional side of losing. It's, to me, the most important thing in this game is knowing you have obligations you have to meet, mortgages, car payments, whatever, and knowing you've got to stay in business long enough to meet those obligations. So you've got to know what you can handle emotionally, what amount of losing you can take, because losing will happen. And you've just got to manage yourself and your emotions and your bankroll accordingly. I mean, a long time to learn that. The first couple years that I played, I'm not ashamed to admit I went broke probably twice learning that lesson. But once it sunk in, then I realized it was entirely possible to beat this game as long as I was around long enough to do it.
That sounds a lot like professional poker players I've heard. Almost everyone will tell you stories about going broke on the way up. And going broke in gambling terms doesn't mean sleeping in the street sucking on a bottle of Woolite. It means you just come down to the end of your bankroll and need to like take time off and get a bankroll back and go at it again, correct?
Exactly. You know, it's like in the movie Rounders, when he loses his bankroll, he starts driving a truck.
Right.
And builds a bankroll back. It's very similar to that. You know, I lost the money I had to gamble with a couple times and had to find more money to gamble with. So that is very similar to that. Yes, I wasn't homeless, but I was not betting for a while.
We've talked a bunch about Mike Maloney during the show. We talked a little bit on the other show also about how you were a consultant on his book, Betting with an Edge. What is your relationship like with him today? You're obviously still friends, but you're kind of on your own doing your own thing these days.
Right. Mike and I, we're great friends, always will be. We don't sit together every day on a daily basis anymore. We still share some information and share the workload to some extent, but my lifestyle's just changed to where I couldn't sit and work on a daily basis with him anymore. But you know, we're great friends and still colleagues, and always will be, I assume.
Excellent. All right, we're going to be learning a lot more about Sean over the course of these shows. And now we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back live from the green room at Keeneland right after this. Hey, everybody, just want to remind you one more time about the special opportunity regarding Keeneland Select and our podcast, the Keeneland Select Players Podcast. If you go to KeenelandSelect.com and you sign up for a Keeneland Select account, you can bet $300 in the first 30 days and receive $100 back into your account. Also, if you bet $500, you'll get $50 back. You can repeat that offer twice. Go to KeenelandSelect.com to sign up today. Make sure you use the promo code ITM19. Okay, we are back at it here on the Keeneland Select Players Podcast. And as promised, we are live from the green room. You hear a lot of background noise. That's what it's like there. We've got a great atmosphere on opening day. And we have back with us, as we had a minute ago, Sean Borman. We also have the People's Champion, Jonathan Kitchen. JK, how has your opening day been so far?
Well, I didn't have the first winner, but I did find the mute button just now, so I think it's going to get a little bit easier. The Prince of Keeneland is sitting next to me. He's a little bit fired up right now. He's carrying on where he's talking two-year-old sale. He's talking Santa Anita. He's talking Lasix. He's talking all kinds of things. It's getting really heated over here, so I'll be muting when Sean and I aren't talking.
I like
Luckily,
it.
Luckily, Sean's sitting right here next to me.
We are coming to you live from opening day. We're going to get a perspective on Sunday at Keeneland, and we're going to talk a little bit about the stake coming up. We had a request for folks to have us have JK and Sean talk about what was going through their minds ahead of a race. We're going to use the Palisades Sprint as an example of that. What do you think, JK? Do you want to start off by talking a little bit about Sunday, and then we'll loop back into what you boys are doing for this race?
Well, yeah, of course. We can definitely loop back. But PTF, you got to give me a little bit more time. We do this on the regular show where I have to pull up the race that you're talking. I actually got excited in the room right now. It's Green Room Royalty right around the corner.
Do
from
tell.
Me. I wanted to try to grab him while I had it muted and bring him over here. But none other than Jim Goodman.
Oh, very nice.
He's a green room legend. He's the king of the green room. If the prince of Keeneland is Jake Ballas, then Jim Goodman's definitely the king of the green room. So I was going to try to snag him and bring him over here. But if you want to start on the race, you know, we might. I didn't bring my silver wig, but maybe we'll let Sean go first on that one.
I like it. Well, a minute about Jim Goodman beforehand, you know. For those of you in New York, you'll appreciate the Cy Sperling analogy. One of the reasons Jim Goodman runs such a great contest at Keeneland in the Grade 1 Gamble and the other contests they run there is, you know, he's not only – he doesn't only run the contest, he's also a client. Jim Goodman does a great job running contests because he's a real contest player. At some point, we're going to have him on. But I think for now, JK, we should just go ahead and talk about – these Sunday races, and then we're going to loop back and talk about the stake that's about to happen. And we'll start off with Sean Borman's thoughts on this Palisade Sprint. Sean, how are you going to be playing this one?
I'm fully on board with Bulletin. I think he's the best horse, going to get the best trip. And I'm going to key him first and second with the 10 Mixed Star and the 11 Strike Silver in Exactas and Tries. I'm anti the 9 Obsidian. I think he's overbet and not near good enough.
All right. So in terms of the specifics of the wagers you'll construct, will you be weighting the different combinations, or is that basically how you're going to play it?
Yes, I will weight it. I will make my biggest play a 12-11 exacta, and then a smaller 12-10 exacta, and keep a 12 on top of those two in a try. And then put the 12 second maybe for 30% of what I did with him on top.
All right, sounds very good. JK, how are you seeing this one? Are you alive in any of your horizontals, or are you going to be going back in this one?
Well, unfortunately, Chad got beat in the fifth, so I'm not alive in any pick five or anything like that. I did play a pick three back, hit the one in the last race. I went ahead and thought – I thought there was about five or six horses in this race that could win, but I thought there was two that were most likely to win. And that was Wesley Ward's horse, the 9, I don't know, the 9's horse name. And then also the 12 Bulletin, who is our Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint winner. I thought those two horses were the most likely winners. As a guy who's got busted up in the early pick five and in the late pick five, you come back in the late pick three as a way to try to save a few dollars for the next day. I just wanted to try to catch this using just those two horses. If the longer horses that I thought were live beat me, then I'll just have to deal with that. One of those being Yes I Am Free, who I think probably wants to go a little bit shorter. And then the horses that are shipping in from Fairgrounds. A friend of the show, Dan Kovaleski, a Final Table NHC player, has pointed out to me that Fairgrounds turf sprinters do well at Keeneland sprinting on the turf. And I actually looked it up on Stats Racelands today, and he's absolutely right. They win at about a 15, 20% clip, something around there, with a 58% return on your money. So those horses made me a little bit nervous, but I think the 9 and the 12 are the most likely winners.
All right, so those are your approaches on this race. While we have a minute here, as the horses are still in the paddock for this opening day sprint at Keeneland, I think we should go ahead, JK, and look at Sunday. There's two stakes races, I believe, on Sunday. JK, why don't we start with you and your thoughts on the two Sunday stakes at Keeneland?
Pete, I have to tell you that when you're around royalty, you can't ignore it. And we do have Green Room Royalty with us right now. So I think it's probably more appropriate that I hand the headset over to Jim Goodman, and you can have a quick conversation with Jim about all things beautiful it is Keeneland.
I love that idea, JK, and we'll come back to you in a minute. So happy to welcome to the Keeneland Select Players podcast Jim Goodman for an unexpected visit. Jim, how are you today? I imagine this is a little bit like Christmas morning for you.
Yeah, I got up about that early this morning. I think I got here at 7:30 for a 3 o'clock post time.
I always,
it's just like Christmas morning, Pete.
I always joke with you and Nate Newby that part of the reason you guys do such a good job running contests, it's like the old Cy Sperling ad in New York, because you're also a client. You're also a horse player in addition to putting on these events. How much do you think, Jim, that it helps you as a contest director, the fact that you're a contest player?
I think it obviously helps me running contests by becoming a contest player. I actually did contests before playing in them. And I did learn from Jonathan, obviously, and a lot of other guys when I watched their play that I'm way below them in quality. But every once in a while, I can get lucky. It does help me to have run the contest and to audit contests and to see what kind of plays these guys make. So it's helped me be a better contest player. Hopefully it's maybe be a better contest host too, because I try to figure out what the guys need.
No doubt the grade one gamble and your fall contest, a lot of players, they just put them on their calendar at the beginning of the year and they don't want to miss them. What can we look forward to this year? Are we going to have record numbers when it comes to your spring contest next year? How's it looking as we approach this year's grade one gamble?
Yeah, I was just talking to Jonathan before we came on, and actually I'm a little bit slow, and I think what's happened is that people are trying to qualify online in the feeders, and now those feeders are almost finished. There will be a couple on Horse Tourneys and DRF this weekend, but I'm getting some phone calls. We had 195 last spring. I don't think we'll approach that this spring. There's a lot of other contests, a lot of competition out there now, and I would be happy if we get 150, 160, something like that.
All right, we'll see what happens next weekend. The eyes of the contest world will definitely be on Keeneland. Jim, another question about you and your contest play. How many times have you been to the NHC at this point, and how important is that event to you in terms of, you know, your life as a, not just a contest host, but as a contest player?
Yeah, the NHC is important. I've never played in the BCBC. I don't get much chance to play in a live money contest. I would like to at some point. The NHC, I just got involved because we have hosted NHC qualifiers for the 13 years I've been here. So I was lucky enough to qualify for the NHC the last 5 years before 2018. I did not qualify last year. So I'm going to try to get back this year with a one-year hiatus. And if I can ever win that contest, I can retire and then play contests full time. I don't have to be here working when Jonathan Kinchin is playing.
I love the sound of that, Jim. Yeah. A great place to qualify, whether you're talking about the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge or the Keeneland Contest, horseplayers.com. We encourage folks to check out Horse Tourneys and Horse Players to see all the latest options. Very happy to announce the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge is one of our latest sponsors on the podcast. Jim, anything else you're particularly looking forward to happening at Keeneland this meeting before we get back to Jonathan and Sean to talk a bit about Sunday's action? What are you really looking forward to this meet?
Well, Keeneland, obviously, Bluegrass Day is going to be huge. We've got five graded stakes races. The Bluegrass has a full field, and it's a wide open Derby, so you never know where the Derby winner is going to come out of. It looks like California is better, but you never know. And we've got three or four horses in there that really have a shot. We also have a pick five that we're doing with Naira on Saturday, the cross country pick five, and we've got three graded stakes plus the Wood plus the Carter from Aqueduct. So that's a great wagering opportunity across two tracks, and you've got five graded stakes races.
Amazing stuff. That's what players want, to be able to bet on the best quality races across the country. Keeneland and Naira providing that, and as horse players, we are very grateful. Jim, thank you so much for taking a minute to stop by unannounced with us today. We appreciate your time very much, and I personally look forward to seeing you over the course of this weekend.
We will be here. Thanks, Pete. I appreciate it. Appreciate your support.
Oh, always, always. All right, JK, good work there. Good, you know, JK, he's not just a great co-host. He's also a great producer, and that was fantastic. We're getting all the vibes from the green room. Great to have a little visit with Jim Goodman there. And I want to talk to you, JK, about what's going on at Keeneland on Sunday. What are you seeing when you look at these stakes races, JK, when it comes to the Sunday Keeneland card?
Well, I think that, you know, anytime you can be at Keeneland and there's stakes race running, they're always fun. I always get horses coming in from all over the place. And the 7th on Saturday, you mentioned the first of the graded stakes races for seven furlongs, three-year-old fillies. They're going to, you know, we got Mother who shows up here, right, for Bob Baffert. And I didn't packed a silver wig because no one told me that I needed to have it while I was here in Lexington. So I'm going to go ahead and look in a different direction. The horse that kind of caught my attention there that I'm going to try to build some things around is the three horse Queen of Bees. I thought that horse had shown some talent at Gulfstream early in the year. You know, it was a young three-year-old, so it ran some numbers that I was a little bit, took a little bit of, notice to. Was 2-1 on debut in December, was beat that day. Had a trip note that wasn't the best ride. Comes back and wins the next two races. Has a little bit of a break. And a lot of times with these three-year-olds, these trainers and connections get the Derby and Oaks fever. I love it when a horse just kind of stays in their wheelhouse. And that's where I feel like this horse is staying, right in her wheelhouse, sprinting around one turn. And I think that will go a long way. If I hesitated for a second, I'm looking up at the paddock, and I thought I saw a groom with a Texas Longhorns football shirt on. It was not a Texas Longhorns football shirt. It was just an orange shirt that said something that I couldn't make out, but it wasn't a Texas one. But that's why I was thrown off.
Tennessee Volunteers, maybe that's a little bit closer.
Whoa. Time out, Pete. Listen, I know you're from the Northeast, but that orange, that bright, obnoxious orange does not have nearly as much class as the burnt orange of Texas.
I learn something every time I do this show with you, JK. Sometimes it's about the subtleties of form studies. Sometimes it's about the colors that college football athletes wear. I'm watching the feed here as well, and I'm looking for this orange groom, and I'm not seeing him, but I believe you. Now, how do you want to do this? Should we bring in Sean for his opinion on the 7th on Sunday, and then we'll come back to you for the second stake?
Sean is sitting right here. He's ready to rock and roll. Let me give you a little roll call real quick, just to let you know who's in the group.
Yeah, who's in the mix today? I'm very sad I can't be there.
Well, the two most important people in the green room right now are Misty.
Oh, Misty is a legend.
Misty is here. She's right over there. She's waving hello. Jesse is here.
Love Jesse.
She's running back to behind the bar. Jim Goodman's still here. We've got Phil Bongiovanni.
Oh, Phil's there. I love Phil. Gulliver Racing. Great friend of the podcast, and in real life, he's helped me many times. He brought Perrin and Susan in the paddock at Del Mar one day. We got some great pictures. Love Phil Bongiovanni. Great contest player, great guy.
And I got a couple more to throw at you real quick, and this is an all-star cat. I got Blake Jesse.
Oh, Blake Jesse, the racing manager, of course, for Luch Racing. Fine contest player, and is like, much like Sean Borman early in his life, decided, hey, the heck with this real world stuff, I'm going to become a professional horse player, and he's done pretty well for himself.
And then we also have, I buried the lead here, we also have Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge Champion, the king of harness racing. I'm throwing out a lot of kings here, right?
Yeah, well, there's a lot. There are a lot of kings in the green room. It's sort of like an international summit of kings. I can only imagine you mean Chuck Grubbs, and he's in the mix as well today, huh?
We're having a good time. I went outside, watched one race live. It's weird here. When you're in the green room, you have to make a decision. Are you going to watch and lose on the screen? or are you going to go outside and watch and lose? And so I have decided when things are going good and you watch it inside, you stay inside. If you watch your first race and you win outside, you go outside. So I'm bouncing back and forth because I haven't got to put it together yet. But we're going to put it together here in the seventh race here, the turf sprint we talked about earlier. And then we're going to put it together on Sunday with maybe a little action late in the car with the two stakes race.
I love it. One quick green room story from me, JK, before we bring in Sean for his thought on the 7th on Sunday. And I wonder if you remember, do you remember where we watched the Farrow's Breeders' Cup? Do you remember that story?
I do remember. We went outside and watched it.
Yeah,
Travis Stone.
For me, it was half and half. And it was the first half of the race. I watched inside in the green room. I wanted to watch them break, and we walked outside, and we had a treat that Breeders' Cup where Travis had his high-powered binoculars, and if you stood next to Travis, the man couldn't help himself. He'd start calling the races when they were on the backstretch. Not like a call the way he calls the Kentucky Derby, but, you know, he couldn't help but put some phrases in, and I can remember watching the Pharaoh in the Breeders' Cup Classic and Travis calling him along with a few key phrases as he turned for home and put the sword to that field. That was one of my great green room memories of all time. If you were, I assume you were standing beside me the whole time.
I mean, I guess I was. It was late in the day. I had already been eliminated with an entry in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. And so when you lose 10,000 on a day, sometimes you turn to Jesse to help with the pain with an adult beverage. And at that point, I probably might have been out of it.
He was well into the Makers 46 at that point. All right, let's turn this conversation back to Sunday at Keeneland. That's what we're supposed to be talking about anyway. Sean Borman, I want to hear your thoughts about the first of these two stakes. Then we'll keep it with you for your thoughts on the second of the two stakes Sunday. And then we'll bring it back to JK. But, Sean, where are you with that first stakes race on Sunday?
Well, Pete, you know, I hate to be unoriginal, but I'm on Queen of Bees also. I love the way she's coming into the race. She's got a great figure pattern for improvement and did so while being wide on a day at Gulfstream where I thought Saving Ground meant something. So I'm on Queen of Bees too.
Fair enough. I mean, sometimes it's as simple as go with the horse who's the most logical, especially when you have that extra bit of information in terms of how the track was playing. I mean, somebody like Sean, somebody like JK, if they're going to do the trip work, I'm going to let that trip work for me, and we're going to keep it there and keep it with Queen of Bees. Sean, what were your thoughts on the second race on Sunday? The second stakes race.
The Appalachian, you know, I think this is one of the few times where I'm going to try to beat a Chad Brown turf horse. I don't think he's got, you know, I don't love what he's got in this race. So I'm going to take a shot with Princessa Carolina for Ken McPeak. I love the way she's coming into the race. She finished great last time into a very slow pace. Ran a huge late pace number. So I'm going to take a shot with her. And I think I would single her in the pick four that day.
I like the confidence very much, and I want to bring in JK for his thoughts on that one. JK, if you're back with us, where are you going in the second of the two stakes races on Sunday?
Well, I thought Claws for Chad was interesting. I kind of love it when Irad draws that inside post. I think Irad is one of the best at just sitting chilly in the pocket. You know, he's got strong hands. He's got a great hold of a horse. Just kind of keeping him down in there. Now, look, you need a little bit of luck when you get that trip, that pocket trip, but you saved every step of ground on both turns. And as long as he can get clear when he needs to get clear and make sure that he gets to get the full run out of Claws, because unfortunately from time to time, if you get stuck down in there, you don't get the full run from a horse. I think he could be extremely dangerous down the inside. But I will tell you this, winning envelope, the two horse drawn right outside to him for Chris Block, I think that horse is a little bit interesting. Was 32-1 the other day running against Concrete Rose. Concrete Rose was the second choice to Newspaper of Record and second choice by a long way to Newspaper of Record in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf. I think that winning envelope could present a little bit of value. Was beaten a length that day by Concrete Rose. If you watch that Tampa race, it was kind of a salad bowl finish. I'll give some credit to the Matisse brothers for that expression, salad bowl finish, where they're all just kind of tossed in there together at the end. So I think winning envelope's a little bit interesting at a price to kind of pick up some pieces. I don't have morning lines, but I'd imagine that she's not short.
No, I would imagine you're right. We're doing this actually, obviously, as you can tell, on opening day Thursday, looking ahead to the Sunday races, so we don't have all of that info. But those are both really interesting ideas when it comes to the Sunday stakes racing. We're going to be launching this podcast as we're going to be doing two specific Keeneland shows a week. You can look forward to those throughout the meet, as well as checking in with us twice a week on the regular In the Money Players podcast. JK, we've got 3 minutes to post here. Are your bets in? Are you ready to fire here? What more can you tell us about what your plays are as they approach the gate for this featured Palisades Turf Sprint on Keeneland opening day?
I got the Prince of Keeneland over here. He's asking me if he can bet to win on Bulletin. I told him that he probably could. Pete, why don't you talk to him for a second and see if you can talk some sense into him.
Absolutely. Here we have the Prince of Keeneland himself, Jake Ballas of Black Type Thoroughbreds. Jake, how psyched are you for this Keeneland opening day? Comes a day early this year on a Thursday. I just imagine you are riding high as we approach this featured race on opening day. How are you feeling?
I love Keeneland, and what makes it even better today is this 3 o'clock post time.
I love it, right? Fun is that?
It's wonderful. No, it's great. There's a lot of young people out here. And I like the Twilight Post, and they're going to have the paddock and the party afterwards, so that should be a lot of fun as well.
Keelan does such a great job. They call it racing as it ought to be. Jake, I know you love Saratoga like me, but there's some special place in my heart that I reserve for Keelan the 3 weeks in the spring and the fall. For you, how important is this meet to your racing year?
You know, like you said, Saratoga is my number one place to go or favorite racing place. Keeneland would be second, and it's a close second. It's very important. All the 2-year-old races start here. Hopefully, we'll have a 2-year-old that can debut here at the last week.
Ooh!
But you know, to me, the season kind of, I know it winds kind of the Derby preps and everything going on now, but to me, the season starts at Keeneland with the 2-year-olds. So it is a special place, and it's gorgeous out here, and the weather today couldn't be any better.
I can't wait. I'm flying down tomorrow, going to spend the weekend in Lexington, obviously. By the time this airs, we'll have already had our kickoff party for opening day. But for me, spring is all about the opening of baseball season and the opening of Keeneland. Jake, what are you doing in this race? Or do you have a bet going in this Palisades Turf Sprint as the horses approach the gate? They're walking on the turf course now.
You know, I didn't. I was asking Jonathan and Sean about Bulletin not being able to get beat. I guess if Bulletin doesn't win, I would have to go with Johnny B and Wesley with the filly. Granted, it is the favorite, or the second choice. Sorry, Bulletin's the favorite. If I can't be Bulletin, I'm going to try with Wesley and Johnny B.
All right, but you better make your decision soon here, Jake. 0 minutes to post. What are we doing?
I'm going to go take Bulletin over Wesley chalk exacta for $200.
All right.
I'm going to go run play right now.
I like it. You go. Send me back to JK. We'll talk as they get ready to go
to
game here.
I'm going to do it for $300. Same exacta. That way, if we're in a contest together, I'm going to beat the big fella because I bet $100 more than him. I didn't tell you this, Pete.
Hit me.
At the Hawthorne contest, I bet $793 double on Hidden Scroll with Code of Honor running second. And I go over to watch the video. There's been pictures circulating. Me and Austin are hanging out. We're the Mavens there, Chris Laramie, the Shermans. And I look over to Dave Gutfreund, and I say, what'd you bet? And he said, I bet a $800 exactly. Hidden Scroll.
How did he know?
And I was like, 800? I bet 793. I bet 793. I'm beat. I'm beat if he gets me. He's like, Jonathan, it's 800. Like, that's where everyone has 800. Why didn't you do it for 801? And I was like, I don't know. I'm not as smart as you, I guess.
JK, you're back on air here. I just hit the record button. What's going on?
No, I'm just, they had a little scratch here. Sean Borman's favorite trainer, Jaime Mejia, scratched here, Gladiator King. So we're going to sit around and watch them circle for a little while. I'd imagine they'll back them up, move all the things over. However, I did want to tell you guys, I'm a little excited. I'm looking forward to reporting back to you guys. Tonight, going to dinner with Hall of Fame jockey Johnny Velasquez.
Oh, fantastic. I can't wait to hear about that. Johnny, one of the good guys for sure, and somebody I've always felt an affinity for. You know, we're about the same age, so when he came into the game, that's when I came into the game, really, and I always felt close to him and have enjoyed his career right from the get-go, and he's just, in the limited interactions I've had with him, just seems like a great guy. You guys are going to have a great time. Where are you going to dinner tonight in Lexington?
I think a place called Azura. It's a Jake Ballas special. You know what I wish? I wish that this race was happening earlier, where I could get all the listeners to donate to the TRF as like a dare, because I want everyone to donate $5 to dare me to ask Johnny what the heck he was doing at the dinner table, ask him what he was doing on Miss Temple City 3 years ago at Saratoga when I needed him for a pick four. So retroactively.
We'll get the donation. Oh, man. Don't be that guy, JK. All right. They are the scratch has been scratched. The gates have been moved. And we are just about ready for this Palisades Turf Sprint at Keeneland. And we'll come back to you for a minute once it's wrapped.
They are at the post. And they're off. In the Palisades Turf Sprint, Bulletin was out alertly. Yes, I Am Free is right there to the inside as well in the opening strides. Abyssinian comes out running in third. Real News is in fourth. Uncapped is fifth. Vote is one lane off the rail in sixth. Tobacco Road moves up one spot toward the inside from seventh. Mixed Star toward the outside is eighth. Strike Silver, center of the course, is in ninth. And then Vivid Verse, who's 10th back toward the inside. Joyful Heart is 11th. Dom Carlos was off a step slowly and is 12th and last. Bulletin, the leader, 22.1 seconds for the opening quarter. Bulletin leading Abyssinian by a length and a half. Yes, I Am Free is third toward the inside. Three lengths off the lead as they turn for home. Top of the stretch, Bulletin is the leader. Here comes Abyssinian to the outside. Yes, I Am Free is running in third down toward the rail. Moving by the eighth pole, Uncapped tries to find more momentum to the center of the course in fourth. Real News, fifth, far outside. They've all got to catch Bulletin, and Bulletin's opened up by four. Real News is coming late down the center of the course, but Bulletin's in front. Inaugural running of the Palisades Turf Sprint to Bulletin and Javier Castellano.
Sean, what's your reaction to Bulletin's performance there, and how did it end up for you paramutually?
Didn't end up great. I was anti the nine, but I couldn't get him to stop all the way. So I'm not going to catch anything, but it was a good play, I think.
Sometimes it's all about the decision you make, not about the outcome you get, and that might be the case there. Sounds like Jake Ballas cashed his win bet. JK, how'd you end up doing there?
I'm alive in the pick three. So I had some pick fives spreading a little bit more in this race. When I got beat out of that pick five, I didn't feel like I think Mike Maloney in the book that you guys wrote together, Betting with an Edge, mentioned like earning the right to bet more.
Yes.
I didn't earn the right to use more horses in this spot if I was going to play it. I played the pick five using more spready type and doing it efficiently. But as I came back in the pick three, I felt like if I was going to play the pick three, I couldn't do that. I needed to kind of narrow it, and I did narrow it to just the 9 and the 12. And I did that efficiently as well. I did it, with more money on the 12 than I did on the 9. So I'm alive in the last to 4, 7, 12, I think. So hopefully we can pick up some pieces. And when that bill comes out today, I can try to look like a tough guy. When Johnny reaches for it, I'll reach a little bit harder if I can just hit this bet.
All right. Godspeed, JK. Godspeed to everybody down at the Green Room. You can hear what a great atmosphere it is down there on Keeneland opening day. Some big late money. I don't know if that was Jake Ballas or what, but big late money pushes Bulletin into even money. He obliges the backers at that number and really never looked in doubt here in the Palisades Turf Sprint on opening day at Keeneland. Also, during the course of the show, you heard our thoughts about opening Sunday, and hopefully folks will be able to cash some tickets based on that intel as well. And that's going to do it for this second episode of the Keeneland Select Players Podcast. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. Thanks so much to Sean Borman, to Jake Ballas, to Jim Goodman, and to Jonathan Kinchin. Most of all, thanks to all of you, the listeners, for making not only the In the Money Players Podcast such a success, but also this new Keeneland Select Players Podcast. We will be back before you know it. Until then, may you win all your photos.